Hello and welcome to Rewatchable, episode number 330. Today we're talking Pitch, season one, episode two, The Interim. My name is Danielle and I will be your host today. And before we jump into anything, I want to let you know how you can get in contact with us because I really hope that you feel comfortable sharing your thoughts with us. You can do so through multiple avenues. You can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at re_watchable or you can come join our Facebook group. We're on Facebook as Rewatchables Rewinders. And we really want to hear your thoughts. So please, please come join us. As I said, my name is Danielle, and I am joined today by three of my co-hosts. We have Brittany, Ariana, and Kendra. Hello.
Hey.
Hi.
All right. We are super excited to talk Pitch today. But before we get into that, we like to do fun facts at the top of every show, just so you guys can get used to our voices. And so let's see. Kendra, would you mind giving us your fun fact for this week?
Sure. Just, I guess, a tip if people are looking for some fun things to do while they're stuck at home. The other night, I did an at-home wine and paint night and watched Bob Ross videos and terribly tried to recreate his paintings, but it was really funny. I assume you guys are familiar with Bob Ross?
Oh, yes. That sounds like a wonderful idea.
Yeah, he is hilarious. There's no one in the world who's doing the right job more than Bob Ross. So it's just a delight to watch him. And my paintings are terrible and his are unbelievably amazing, but it was a fun night.
Lots of tiny trees.
So many happy tiny trees. Mine were not nearly as happy though.
Oh, well, as long as it was fun, that sounds like a great idea and good tip. Ariana, would you like to give us your fun fact?
Yeah, my fun fact is a semi-PSA. I recently downloaded Google Fit, and it's really cool. It, like, tracks your steps and stuff, because I was worried that being home all day, I wasn't getting, like, any exercise at all. And it also made me realize, so basically it made me realize that even in regular life, I don't get any exercise at all. And I'm definitely going to get heart disease for sure if I don't change my ways. I was very disappointed to find out how long it takes to get 10,000 steps in that I haven't been able to get them yet.
Yeah.
So I go on a lot of walks in the backyard trying to get those steps in. But yeah, just a reminder to get some sunshine, get some vitamin D, get your spirits up, and don't get heart disease right now if you can. Also, a lot of times I can't go outside, so like I walk around in my room, literally, in circles. So that's another option for you guys. So I know a lot of people are stuck in their apartments. So
I do that, especially if I'm like close to hitting my step goal, which is 8,000, and I can barely hit that most days. But yeah, I'll walk around in circles or I'll do like weird dance moves in my room until I get there.
My mom told me that the recommended amount is 10,000. And so far, the highest amount I've been able to get is 6,000. And that's going on like two walks a day, like long walks.
Yep.
But I realized, I was like, oh my God, on a regular day, like when I was just going to work, I was probably getting maybe 1,000 steps in if I was lucky, which is really bad. So
I stopped wearing my Fitbit when I was going to work because it would just shame me all the time. It'd be like 3 p.m. and it's like, you barely took 500 steps. And I'm like, oh my God.
And it feels like I've walked miles.
Yeah. It would like buzz at 10 to the hour every time. And it's just like, you need to get 250 steps. I'm like, please stop. I know.
I can't right now. Okay.
I would like be like, okay, fine, I'll walk to the kitchen and back. And it was like, okay, that was 25 steps. I'm like, oh no.
Oh yeah, no, I could never set those reminders because it would very much stress me out. Ugh. Well, Ariana, I really hope you don't get heart disease.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. But that sounds like a good idea though. Just a reminder to get up from your desk even is a good thing.
Yeah, sometimes I like watch TV and walk around my room in circles like a crazy person, but yeah. Getting those steps in.
Yep, exactly. Brittany, your fun fact, is it quarantine related?
Well, since nothing else is going on, I guess it can be quarantine related.
Sure, why not?
So my fun fact is I can bridge both of these fun facts together and say that I have felt more connected to my like friends from college and elsewhere by having this quarantine. Cause normally I talk to my hypable friends and friends I've met through, like, you know, just being on the internet pretty regularly. Like I usually joke that I see Natalie, who lives in Australia, more than I see my friends who live in the same state. And this quarantine, it's like, oh, well, if you're calling me, I literally have nothing better to do. So of course I'll answer the phone. So yeah, I've been really connected to my friends a lot more. My one friend and I will go on walks together. She'll take a walk in Boston and I'll take a walk here and we'll talk on the phone. So that's helpful for both of us to get out of the house because we're both adjusting to working at home.
That's so great.
Yeah. So, you know, I just talk to people more on the phone, which is weird. You know, normally I'm a very big texter, like don't call me, but I have a couple friends who are like very into phone calls and I've taken up doing that a little bit more. So it's interesting. It's finding new ways to talk to people that you normally wouldn't. Like I've had a virtual happy hour and, you know, with people who like, we have a group text, but it's just only when someone finds something funny to send to it that we all really start chiming in and reconnecting. But now having these like scheduled times to talk, it's been a nice break in the day for me, as well as, you know, just reconnecting. So that's fun.
Yeah. And it kind of feels almost like because no one can go out and do anything, we can't really catch up with people just by watching their social media either.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So phone calls are definitely bridging the gap for that too.
Yeah. It's not like, oh, I saw you do that puzzle. Okay, great. Like, you know, we have to actually talk yes. about other things that are going on.
Yes, exactly that. That's awesome. That's really cool. To round it out, my fun fact is kind of quarantine related, but it really kicked off in February, hardcore, when I went to visit Ariana, and I stayed with her and her wonderful cat. And so I wanted a cat really badly, and then the quarantine hit, and I really, really want a cat really badly now. So I am currently cat browsing, and I sent in an application for a cat yesterday. And I keep refreshing my email to see if like they contact me about it. But hopefully, I don't know, maybe not by the time everyone hears this, but hopefully within the next like couple weeks, I will have a feline companion. And I'm very excited about it.
Oh my gosh, that's so exciting.
I want it so bad.
Oh my gosh, Danielle, we should Zoom and then our cats can be Zoom friends.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I want that really badly. That'll be fun.
So is it a younger cat? Is it an older cat?
The one that I sent in an application for is just under a year old. And she actually looks like my cat that died a year and a half ago, except my cat was more gray and she's like a calico. But she looks really similar. And I hope that I get her. I was looking for cats between like anywhere between 1 and 3. Because I don't necessarily want a kitten. And their places are now actually trying not to adopt out kittens without having them be in pairs because they don't get socialized well if they get adopted as like solo. So I didn't want 2 cats. So I've been looking for a little bit older, but 1 cat.
Where are you applying for her from?
Different rescues around here. So I think this one is a rescue that takes cats out of like Chicago Animal Control. So I've been refreshing and searching Pet Finder basically and seeing whatever pops up there and then doing my research on the place and all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
It's exciting news.
Thank you. Hope to have an update for you. I don't know if next time would be too quick. It might be, but fingers crossed. All right. That is enough of our fun facts for today. We will probably have more quarantine fun facts next week because that's kind of what our lives are now. But also, our lives are very much pitch at this moment, and I'm very happy about it. So let's jump into our discussion of episode 2, The Interim, And Ariana wrote a quick synopsis for us, which goes, in this episode, Al's past sexist comments about Ginny resurface and further alienate Ginny from the team. Meanwhile, Mike comes to terms with the end of his marriage and the looming end of his career. In flashbacks, we learn why Amelia chose to represent Ginny. So let's go into, I guess, the biggest like plot point of this episode and talk about Al and the comments that he made a few years ago while Ginny was still coming up through the minors. Ginny's starting to get along with her teammates, and then this sort of comes out. And I was curious as to how his comments and kind of what we've seen of him so far as a coach sat with everyone. Does it feel like he has grown at all from those comments, or just how did that strike you that this was going to be the focus of the episode?
His comments were definitely annoying, but also like knowing Al these past two episodes, and especially like after his apology, like I agree with Ginny. I don't think he's I think he's a good person who's just like very old. And I do feel like he learned something, but he's also like dumb. I don't know if I'm making sense. I don't want to like be like, oh yeah, this was totally okay that he did this. It's not. The things he said suck, but I don't think he had like malice behind them. He's just dumb.
Yeah, I agree. And I think his apology, yes, it was like, you know, written by the team, and, you know, he did read it and he did go to Ginny himself and try to talk through it, but he doesn't know how to talk about any of this stuff. So, you know, watching him flounder and then deliver the statement and then immediately back himself into another corner, you know, he doesn't know how to address this stuff. He's not really skilled at watching what comes out of his mouth, which I agree with Ginny. It's causing more of a distraction to let it keep going on than it is to, you know, accept that he said these things and that they're now in a position to have a working relationship and they're figuring it out and he has apologized and they're trying to move on. But yes, it sucked. It's an unfortunate thing that happened. And of course, I'm glad it came out in episode two instead of more so down the line, because, you know, we are setting up already in episode one that they wanted Al kind of, you know, he's already got one foot out the door as far as the managers or the upper management is concerned. So this kind of like helps give them that little bit of rationale to push him all the way out, but also, you know, address this comment in light of other things that are going on in the world for this episode.
I think I found it interesting. I don't know, just how immediately Ginny went and was like, this needs to not be a thing. Because I think, and she has a comment that comes out later, I think, to Mike's ex-wife, and I know it's someone's favorite line, but I think my expectations were thwarted a little bit by the way that she handled it, just because I see Ginny as the first woman in professional baseball, and it's hard not to see her as some sort of icon. And so for that to happen, or like because of that, I project my expectations on what will happen or what she will do or should do on her. And it's easy to forget that she is very much just a person. So I'm not sure if anyone else kind of felt like their expectations for how she was going to handle it, and especially like from the get-go, how if they were thwarted at all.
I feel like this is probably not the first time she's dealing with something like this. Like this is the first time she's been the first woman in the major leagues. This is definitely not the first time she's been a woman in a man's world. And she's had to deal with comments like this before, for sure. So it's a little frustrating the way that the world put what they think and what they think she should feel on her, when like in reality they should be listening to her voice. Like, it's her that the comment is about,
right?
And if anything, Amelia should have been working to coach Al on how to make a better statement and how to make everyone feel more comfortable rather than just trying to tell Ginny what to do. Like, that was obviously what she wanted, was to mend that relationship, and Amelia could have helped there rather than doing what she did.
Yeah, let's talk about Amelia for a second, because I am really interested in the way that Amelia handled it by, like, not handling it. And I get that we get the flashbacks of her. Why did Amelia want to handle it the way in which she handled it? Is she still seeing Ginny as that sort of person to project all these things on her because she saw Ginny and was inspired to quit her own job? Like, I don't know. Help me untangle this. What are the thoughts about how Amelia handled this or did not handle it? And do you think she was right?
It feels like some of what Amelia is doing is based on the fact that she's kind of put all of her chips onto Ginny right now. Like, she's all that she has. She gave up everything that she had to represent her. So it feels a little selfish in that she kind of needs Ginny to be the star that she sees her as, rather than just the teammate that she wants to be. But I think there probably is some of what you said too. Like, Ginny inspired her, so it's also her self-image and self-worth that's tied to what she's doing.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that, you know, Amelia has a hard, you know, Amelia is taking Ginny as her poster child. So, like, Ginny, whatever she does, obviously immediately reflects how Amelia's handling or pulling the ropes behind the scenes as far as the media is concerned.
Sure.
We get that a lot with the flashback to her brother, you know, like, where he says that line, like, I literally don't know how she called the people, you know, like, she called all these news outlets and I don't know how she did it. So it's not just like, oh, all these people showed up for Ginny, which is what, like, you know, a lay person might see. But whereas people in the industry would see everything that was constructed behind the scenes in terms of Amelia. So I think that she's trying to get Ginny to fill, like, these, like, you know, it's almost like, I think of it as like a Girl Scout badge. Like, you know, okay, you can be the voice for coming out against Al. You can be the voice for young girls who want to go into baseball. You can be the voice for, you know, being a woman in a locker room and, you know, like, not having the responsibility of all of the men's actions. You know, there's a lot of things that Ginny can check off, but she's not listening to the things that Ginny wants to check off and be the voice of. So it's finding that balance. And I think that the way Ginny's behaving, you know, Amelia doesn't snap at her in any way, but she also recognizes, you know, where she may be wrong and how she's trying to wield her power.
And I think we see almost a little bit of Amelia's, idolization is the wrong word, but the way in which she views Ginny. We see that sort of crack at the end after Ginny comes out from finishing the game and they have that interesting exchange about, like, who works for who. There's no malice there. It is a little tense, but you can kind of, at least for me, I kind of see Amelia look at Ginny in a slightly different way than we've seen before. And I think that's what you were saying, Brittany. I think that's, like, a lot of it. They're trying to figure out, she's trying to figure out, like, how best to move forward, but also recognizing perhaps the different weights she herself was putting on Ginny.
It feels a little sleazy that, like, I'm sure there was never a time that Ginny wasn't honest about what she actually wanted. And it kind of feels like up until now, Amelia thought that she could kind of manipulate and push her into doing what she wanted because, like, she's the one in the know about the industry and, like, she is, like, she's kind of like a sweet talker. She's a powerful woman. Like, she thought that she could make her do what she wanted and now is realizing that she can't. So, I don't know. It kind of makes me like her less that maybe she was thinking that.
Yeah. I think the one thing that kind of made me like her slightly less, like you were saying, is the fact that Ginny was going on Jimmy Kimmel and somehow the idea of, like, doing a sort of jokey thing, but, like, with locker room for decorating, that was the thing. Like, every time they brought that up, it was so grating to me.
Yeah, that felt super cringy. Like, how is it okay to play into the fact that she's like the only woman that way? And Al's comment is so egregious. Like, it almost feels like the same thing to me.
Yeah, it was just, it was really uncomfortable. And I know that it could have been done well. And I know that it's comedy, but it just didn't sit right. And also, like, I don't know. I don't necessarily like Jimmy Kimmel, so I had a negative view on it from the start. And just the fact that they were going to do that and they kept talking about it just made it so much worse.
Yeah, there are better late night hosts to get that out. And there's only one
guys.
Yeah.
I have to step in now. What's wrong with Jimmy Kimmel? There's nothing wrong with him.
Actually, in the grand ranking of all late night hosts, Jimmy Kimmel's my second favorite. But
he was even funny in this episode when she was like, sorry, I know the jokes are funny. He's like, no, they're not funny.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think he's a good host. I think sometimes when he gets into certain things, he can be mean. Like, he can be kind of mean about nerdery sometimes, even though he is very much in that circle. And so some of those things just haven't sat well with me previously. I can't think of any specific examples.
Yeah, I think a lot of his humor is at the expense of others. Like, he like shows celebrities bad fan art that people have done, for example, and like makes fun of them on air.
But I think he's a good host. And I think he was, I do think he was good in this episode. Like you were saying, Ariana, like we didn't see any meanness, but it was just, when I think of Jimmy Kimmel, I think of like, I don't know. It's a personal thing.
Yeah. I appreciated how well he was able to let the sketch go and let her have the platform to speak. Granted, we saw the taping. Who the hell knows what aired when it actually went on? But I thought that he was fine, and I liked her whole little, like, you know, she was able to like get every topic in that everybody wanted her to talk about on her own terms. She found her platform to do it by, you know, giving in to what Amelia wanted. But I think going back to, like, you know, the pressure that Amelia was putting on her to be like, just go and do the Jimmy Kimmel thing. And, like, you know, Ginny has that talk with Lawson right before she goes off to do Jimmy Kimmel. You know, it's like, yeah, it's so stupid. Like, why am I doing this? And, you know, that part didn't make any sense to me as to why she was pushing it. But then, you know, we see that whole scene where she's at dinner and it's more like, it's like that Aladdin feeling, like, I can show you literally the world. I can get you whatever you want. Like, this is a big name and I could do it for you, but it's not helping her. So just because she can have it doesn't mean that she needs it.
Mm-hmm. I do want to say, now that you guys like had your space to
just wrong you are.
Yeah,
I really don't think there's anything wrong with the, like, I think she's just doing her job and she's very good at her job. Yeah. And I don't think she's trying to like manipulate Ginny. And if she is, then that's part of her job. Like, it's her job to know the optics of what things will look like. And this is like, I know it's our second episode, but it's literally like the next day after she wins her game. Like, as you know, at the beginning, they're like, Ginny won her game last night. And then there was the locker room brawl. So it's literally like the second day after she debuted or whatever. It's still the first week. So she's still the biggest thing on the planet. And I think that for Amelia, she's like, hold on. I know that this is like uncomfortable for you in the locker room, but people, you just debuted. You're like this huge thing. And the first thing you're going to talk about is, no, it's okay that my boss like made these sexist comments about me. That's not the right platform you want to like start off on. So it's her job to look at the big picture, not to focus on Ginny's like, you know, coworker squabbles. That's not her job. So I think she was doing her job, and Ginny may not like it, and Ginny can do what she wants. That's her prerogative. She is the boss, and she did what she wanted in a very classy way. Yeah, if anything, I mean, I think that Amelia, I guess she, I don't know. It was kind of messed up how she didn't put out the statement after Ginny told her to. But she also did cop out to it the next day. So I don't know. I just don't think she deserves as much hate as she's getting.
Okay, that's fair. But I don't think that... Never mind. I think everything that I was trying to say about her got misconstrued. But the... Because she is doing her job, and the way that I thought I phrased it was, you know, not just in 24 hours she became this manipulative horror show of a person, because I don't think that that's true at all.
No, I don't think so either.
She's doing her job, like I said, and you said, and everybody said, and I think that there was just a misstep with trying to get her to be on a decorating thing, but, you know, that's neither here nor there, because she is doing her job, and she just needs to figure out how checking off what she wants to give Ginny aligns with, you know, how things are going, and it's not going to happen in 24 hours.
I think your point, Ariana, as to the timing of everything is something that I didn't consider. Like, yes, they do mention it a lot. And I think just with TV shows like this, I kind of always immediately assume that more time than that has passed. So I take that point. And I do think that changes a little bit how I see. I don't see Amelia as a bad person by any means. And it's a very tricky situation in trying to figure out how best to take advantage of the position that Ginny is given, while also letting her do and like excel at her job at the same time. And I do think that's a tricky path to follow. So I think that it's also very interesting how we have Amelia, and then we also have Mike Lawson's ex-wife, who's also trying to tell Ginny what to do in a situation that is kind of like opposite end gross of what Al said or did. And I think Mike Lawson's ex-wife came on very, very strong. And she wasn't the only one, but in expecting Ginny to have such strong opinions right out of the gate when she is very much a new person to this space. Was Mike's ex-wife, how did people feel about her? We meet her, I hate saying Mike's ex-wife. I literally just cannot remember her name. I look at her and I think Ariel from Once Upon a Time. And I can't...
Rachel.
It's Rachel, thank you, not Ariel. How did Rachel strike everyone? Because we meet her very much as Rachel first and Mike's ex later.
I have no strong feelings towards her. I don't hate her, but I don't like... I get what she wants from Ginny, and I do agree with her that I think it... Like, with Ginny having this platform, it would be a beneficial thing for her to speak out, which she does in the end. Her approach was, like, not the greatest, for sure. And obviously, like, I don't love that she cheated on Mike, who's very sad and broken. but I don't, like, hate her. She's, you know, just a person trying to make it in the world, I guess. She's trying to do what's good. I don't know. She's fine.
Yeah, I think in terms of a lot of the different kinds of TV anchors and news people that we saw throughout the episode, I liked being able to have one of those people be an actual person within the show and be able to have a dialogue with them rather than just listening to them. I thought that was important. And then I also just found it really interesting about how she was able to get past people working at the stadium or like make her way down to the locker room to like be able to talk directly to Ginny. And it shows how much initiative she has and like how much she very much believes in what she's doing, which again, like you said, Anna, not a bad thing. She just was a little bit strong for, as you said before, someone who just came up and is just entering the space.
And she doesn't like know her in any way. And Ginny was right. She should have talked to her publicist, but
yeah.
I mean, if I'm being honest, I mean, it sucks, but she's not a main person, right? Like, she's not one of our people on the call, like, top in the call sheet. So the most interesting thing about her for me is what she illuminates about Mike and that she's the kind of person that he would fall in love with and choose to marry and still be hung up on, that she's like, yes, she's beautiful, but she's also like age appropriate and obviously like brilliant and opinionated and tough. And I think that's really interesting that even though he has like this playboy image, like he's not at all really.
Yeah, I like that. I want to get to that because I want to spend a ton of time, Mike. So let's hold that thought and we'll get back to it. I didn't mean to lead into that. Before we move on, any last thoughts about Al's comments or the way that both Ginny and Amelia kind of handled them or reacted to them? Did anybody think that Al should have been kind of fired over them? I know that he was kind of already being pushed out the door, but I'm assuming this just kind of feels like an excuse as to be able to fire him.
It definitely showed a different side of the guy who owns the team, I think. I know we had tried to untangle those roles, but
he
was
older
like,
guy.
Yeah. He was like so kind to Ginny and like so welcoming. And then you saw kind of like the darker, more business savvy side of him in this episode. It seems weird to me that like the team is having trouble coming together and like they just had this huge shift and bringing a new pitcher in and now they're going to bring in a new manager. Seems kind of crazy, but maybe it's not in the baseball world.
I'm very curious what their record is because there's a lot of talk about going for a ring and from what we've seen, I don't think that this team is anywhere close to even making the playoffs in the real world. So that's one thing that bugged me this episode, but that's neither here nor there. I was just watching them play that second game and I was like, oof, God.
Throwing the balls everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, I know it was probably just one bad game, but still, like, are you really doing well? Like, I couldn't tell.
Do we know what month this is?
I was trying to figure that out too. I feel like it was the end of the summer, but that would mean that, like, their position is pretty much tied up in terms of being in the hunt for October.
Yeah. Okay. I know that there are markers that come in a few episodes down the line. One that I can very much think of. I just don't know where that's placed within the season.
Yeah. And since it's only been, 24 hours, I don't really know how, you could, they play so many games. You could, really stretch out the timeline here if you want to show every single game or even just like pick up every series that's still only like every like moving a week at a time almost. So
for someone that we haven't spent a ton of time with and who is like a secondary character, I was disappointed with Al's firing, if only because of Mark Consuelos's reactions to it. I think it was interesting to kind of dive into his relationship with Al without the two of them actually being together a lot. But we hear a lot about how like Al found him and gave him the job or got him the job that he has or like helped get him an opportunity. And I think that really humanizes Al even when Al isn't in the room and we don't necessarily see all of the things that he does. And Mike does it a little bit later in his speech as well.
Seems like, and even from what we see of when he apologizes to Ginny, it seems like he's somebody who actually cares about his players, like as people, and sees them as people, and that's nice.
It is, because not a lot of people in professional sports or, I don't know, anything entertainment even related are like that. And Al seems very genuine. And it's disappointing to see him get removed in this way. And I have nothing against his interim replacement, but also the guy kind of seems a little bit like a dope. And I thought that was interesting too. Possibly
is
because
Buck replacing him?
I think he's like an interim replacement until they can actually hire a new coach.
Oh, okay. I missed that.
Yeah.
I just thought Mark Consuelos was taking him out to dinner to break the news to him.
Oh, I don't think so, because I think the way in which Buck walks into Al's office and kind of goes behind.
But Al's in there.
Yeah, but he goes behind the desk, and that felt kind of symbolic rather than saying out loud, I'm coaching.
Mm, interesting. Well, I mean, I have no idea, so I'll
yeah, and I for it. Have a terrible memory. So there's that too. Let's leave Al there for now and all those comments. I'm sure we'll kind of loop back to it in a little bit because this is very much the overarching story for the episode. But I want to actually rewind and go back to those flashbacks, because instead of flashbacks being about her dad in this episode, they were very much about her brother. And for anybody who watched Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. towards the beginning of its run, they'll recognize him as Agent Triplett, which it's nice to see him on screen. But also it's just nice to see Ginny and her relationship with her brother, and the fact that her brother is not in any of the present day action or even there for her opening day, I think is really interesting too. So for the newbies, first impressions on Ginny's brother as like an older person and not the kid who was kind of slapped around by their dad. Not slapped around, but who was there as kind of like bait for Ginny by the dad.
I liked kind of their relationship. They're very sweet together. I'd be interested to know more of what he's up to now, or like even at the time, what he was up to on top of being Ginny's manager. I kind of wondered like how secret were the avenues that Amelia went through to like get in touch with all those people and bring them to the game. Like it seemed a little, when he was like, I don't know how to do that, it seemed like such a man comment. It's like, well, figure out how to do it. Like if that's going to be your job, like figure out how to do it. Right. But I don't know, maybe she has like these crazy connections that would have made it impossible for someone else to do. But yeah, yes, I mean, also very intrigued that he's not in the present day. Definitely wonder why.
Yeah, I think she's leagues above him. I think it's interesting that he's in this position to begin with. But Brittany, did you have any feelings about the brother?
I just have the same questions. I think it was kind of probably the easiest avenue to get the brother involved was to have him step up and represent her. I mean, I don't think Ginny would have known where to go, and I'm sure that people weren't willing to help her, which is what makes Amelia so appealing as a woman coming in and being like, I want to help you, as opposed to her brother probably stepping up and being like, I'll do it because I'm your family and I probably get a cut of whatever locker room place that's not an actual name brand contract that I was able to get you. But I think that, you know, it got him involved in her life, and I was glad to see that they were close, especially for her to have an ally. You know, she might not, we don't really know her interactions besides, you know, we got a little bit of her relationship with Blip in episode one, but you know, we don't really know what's going on that team that she's currently on, you know, how people are treating her and how they respect her. You know, we saw a little bit of like the girls in the stand from the, you know, ladies night or appreciation game that her brother was able to put together. But I liked that, you know, she had someone to like, you know, walk her off the field at the end of the day and was waiting for her. So that was, I really liked seeing that. And I am interested though, what he did in the last 2 years. Maybe the mom needed them and he can't get away. But who knows, like, I feel like she would have called him, you know, instead of going down and playing catch with her dead dad, or pitching to her dead dad. Maybe she would have, you know, called someone for advice. So I'm curious how that relationship fell apart or didn't.
Are we assuming, or was it explicitly stated that he would have taken on that role after her dad died? Like, would her dad have had that role when he was alive?
I was assuming it.
The managerial role?
Yeah.
I think that's a safe assumption. Ariana, as someone who has seen this series through, was there anything about the brother's introduction here that kind of stuck out to you more this time than previously?
For sure, especially after we talked a lot in the pilot and Natalie mentioned, I think it was Natalie, about how she wanted to know what the brother's relationship to her and her dad was like as an adult. And so I thought it was really interesting in this episode that there doesn't seem to be at least any like outward animosity. Like we all have, you know, our like issues with our parents, but it seems like at least in a, on a basic everyday level, like he loved his dad and they miss their dad and they both had like a good relationship with him. So that was interesting to see. And it was also trying not to spoil things. It is really interesting to see him like just how like selfless he is in this moment, in that like he is very aware that she has the potential to be a star and like go to the top. And he also is self-aware enough to know that he can't get her there. And so he is like, he is giving up this thing that would probably be very good for him, for his sister, like for her. And like he's really putting her before himself in this moment. And I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, I want to pick out two things you kind of mentioned there. Was one, kind of his relationship with his dad and his sister. We don't see him feel, as you said, animosity towards like how much attention his dad paid to Ginny. And we don't see him feeling pressured to fill the dad's spot either. It seems very much like something he wants to do and is excited about doing. And then, yeah, to have that and have that be a connection perhaps to his dad and to his sister and give it up because he knows it's what's best for Ginny is really, it's a small thing, but it's also a big thing in just believing in his sister and showing how much he does care about her and not making it a thing where like everything that his dad or really probably he has ever really done has revolved around Ginny. Like that doesn't factor in here. He's very much completely okay with giving up the reins on whatever he was going to be doing for her.
Yeah, it was very wild to see him just let it happen almost. It was sort of like, oh, she's here. I mean, I know this happened probably over the course of a few days or a day. They went out for beers. I don't know, timeline-wise.
Yeah, but time is weird here.
Yeah, so he recognized, you know, what he couldn't give Ginny in this moment and also didn't ask for anything in return. It was sort of just like, oh yes, you go with her, you know, I'll pick up the rest of the family stuff that we have going on, you know, I'll go see mom, I'll go do this, I'll go do that. You know, it wasn't okay, he wasn't speaking for her. It wasn't like, okay, yeah, you can come on and help us out, but I want to stay on as yada yada yada, and I make the final shots, you know, final calls and whatever. It was very much like, no, this is the best place I can leave her as a caretaker, that I'm assuming is a role that he took on, because that's what it felt like. It wasn't, yes, he was helping her out and, you know, he had a job and all of it, but I felt like it was more of a, I'm going to supervise to make sure everything she's taken care of.
Yeah. And I mean, as someone who, like you said, didn't know how Amelia did what she did, isn't super well-versed in any sort of like advertiser marketing, like he recognized exactly how talented Amelia is and knew that her hands were the best ones for his sister.
But also just like the resources she has. And I feel like this is a thing that like a lot of child stars go through, like where their manager starts off as like their mom, but then at a certain point they have to get like a manager that isn't their mom. Even if it's just like to preserve their relationship with their parent.
Because it seems very clear that she literally just made a few calls. And I'm assuming like she still has contacts from that firm that she was working with previously. I did like what these flashbacks did for Amelia, as well as what they did for introducing the brother. I think they're really effective. And flashbacks a lot of times aren't all that effective. So as a kind of narrative storytelling device, we've seen it with stuff with her dad, and now we've seen it with her brother and with Amelia. Are flashbacks here feeling like a good way to impart information and background, or are they scenes that people aren't as interested in here? How do you feel about the flashbacks?
I actually really like them, and I'm not a huge flashback person, but I think that they're doing, because the real timeline, the like, you know, present day timeline is moving pretty slow. You know, it's been like 48 hours, I think, in real time. You know, these add something to it, you know, like how, because this is a big moment and it's not just a flash in the pan type of thing. And I think that's what the main timeline is trying to tell us, especially based on, you know, the way Adriana brought it up, like, you know, like she's still selling out stadiums and it's only been a couple days, you know, it's not dying down anytime soon because it's very much in the moment situation. So I think that, you know, that they're adding a lot to what we can't see, you know, of how big this moment actually is over time. Cause we're not like, you know, it could die out at any moment. You know, Al could get fired, the new manager can come in, they could realize that she's not all that and send her back to the minors, and it could be over in another 24 hours. You know, you never know.
Yeah. And we're not seeing this story through the normal lens of like normal person working to make it into the big time.
Mm-hmm.
Like the big time isn't the goal here. It's kind of like the staying and growing within that. And so, yeah, I think it's really interesting. And especially with what you're saying in terms of time frames and how fast or slowly time is moving.
Something else that I noticed about these that I really liked, at least in this episode, I truly don't remember anything about the flashbacks. Yeah. But in this episode, something I noticed is that the flashbacks were about Amelia, but Amelia was not the focus of this episode at all, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. Like in the present A story, like A, B, even C storyline, she wasn't the focus. Like really Al and Mike were a much bigger focus, but because the flashbacks were about her, like it illuminated some of like the smaller things she did. I don't know if, yeah. I don't know if I'm making any sense, but like, I feel like it would be more annoying if it was like, oh, Mike is getting old. And meanwhile, we're watching flashbacks of him being like young or something and sprightly, like when he first started. Like, I like that it was, that the flashbacks were about something like a different storyline, even though it is tied to the A storyline because she was like bickering with Amelia, but we barely see her in present day at all in this episode.
Yeah, I think it's a good, indication of how well balanced all of the characters are, in that if someone gets more attention in one way, it illuminates, like you said, it illuminates or exposes different aspects of other characters, because everyone interacts with each other in some way and they have some sort of impact. And so I didn't think of it that way, Adriana, but I think you're completely right in that this episode was and was not about Amelia at the same time. Like her. No, go ahead, please.
I was going to say, I think the flashbacks are also, you know, revealing things that about Ginny and Amelia's relationship. Like, I like the way you're bringing the two of you are talking about this, because there was that, you know, she had all of those signs printed with the I'm next, and like that solo I'm next sign that we saw just written on a piece of cardboard, like that was impactful regardless of not, like, you know, not having the context of episode two, because it's just that little girl and you see Ginny looking at it. But Ginny walked into a field thanks to Amelia, filled with signs that said, I'm next, held up by little girls. So like, it was just very nice the way that tied that little moment together without being spoken. You know, because we just had that tiny little girl with her little cardboard sign that I guess her dad ripped up before he brought her there. But, you know, to walk into like professionally printed signs, you know, like just how far they've come, but yet how those little things, you know, are going to be the building blocks for how the series is going to go.
Yeah, I did like that moment too.
Yeah, I love that you brought that up because I just noticed that this time around, the I'm Next connection, which is so cool.
And I think it's also really interesting in how deeply personal this episode is about Amelia without being about Amelia. Like, we find out just how she felt at her job just by watching her sit there. But we also find out that she had trouble conceiving with her husband, and her husband left her in the doctor's office, basically. And that's not portrayed as something that completely broke Amelia. It's not portrayed as something that's like deeply defining about Amelia, but instead it deeply defines what she decides to do next, or it is the catalyst for what she decides to do that then ends up deeply defining her. I don't know. I don't know if what I'm saying makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was really, it obviously impacted her greatly.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
because
she goes into work and is like, I quit, I'm done.
Yeah. But it's like, that's not the thing that she's known for.
No, I don't think anybody knows. I mean, it seemed, something that I thought was really interesting about her is that she makes it seem, I mean, I like this about her, but I don't know how everyone else feels about her. I like that she presents it as like, Ginny, I'm doing you a favor. Like, and that's how we seem in the first episode too. She's very much like, I'm here to grace all of you with my presence and I'm doing you a favor because I'm the best. But really, like, she was in such a broken place and she was done. And Ginny is the thing that made her feel like she wanted to keep going. And so, but that's like her secret. She doesn't let Ginny know that.
Yeah, it's not something that she could do. Well, then let's talk about Mike Lawson, because I want to spend a good amount of time talking about him. I know that thoughts about him so far were kind of mixed, at least in our first episode. But we learn quite a bit about him. His body is falling apart. He's on the relatively older side. He has to deal with a bunch of like early 20 somethings on a daily basis.
That's what I think it's so funny. Sorry. Being like, he's so old. He's 36.
But yes, like, he's old. He's old in the world of sports, but like the guy that I had recently dated is like the same age as him. So he's that old. Yeah. But like his, in terms of sports, his body is falling apart. He's been divorced and all he wants to do at the end of the day is like not go home and be alone. And I thought that this was a really interesting episode for Mike in a similar way, actually, that it was for Amelia, in that it's not necessarily about him, but it was very much about him. So newbies, did this episode change your perception of Mike Lawson in any way? Positive or negatively?
I think I kind of always assumed that he was a good guy, which is more of what we got in this episode. And they kind of even dropped hints in the first episode that his age was an issue. Like, it was kind of a joke that he was the old guy on the field. It was interesting and nice to see him more vulnerable, though, in both the sense of him like having to take the ice baths and like having to work out more than everyone else, because this age thing is like, it's a real thing that's happening like now to him. That's like, his career is going to be over. I don't think it changed very much. I thought the introduction of his ex-wife, that was probably what changed the most, not in terms of what I think about his character, but just in terms of his whole dynamic and what's maybe to come for him. I kind of feel like that's probably not over and that's going to be more of a storyline.
Yeah, I mean, my opinion of him hasn't really changed, but I will say I liked the moments where, you know, he was talking strategy with Ginny. Like, so yes, he invites her to sit next to him on the bus, and like he like fluffs out the conversation by like adding in a couple of jibes about his ex-wife wanting everything from him and yada yada. Like, mm-hmm. he's not fully open with her, but when he's showing her tape, it's like, I always love those moments where, like, you know, yes, you have like this big macho guy or like even like someone who's just like so skilled at their job, but you don't get to see the, I mean, this is a common term, but like the insider baseball of it all, you know, like,
yeah, you don't see the gears shift or moving.
Right. And he is good at his job. Like, otherwise he wouldn't be the captain. He wouldn't be paid so much money. You know, it wouldn't be like this whole thing where his career ending is like a horrible thing. He's good at his job, and this is why. So like the fact that they're sitting there watching tape, and like he gets there early, you know, to work out, and he's putting in that effort. You know, we see him training. He's not just, we get the sense that, you know, yes, he likes to make these grand entrances and show up late to the locker room and yada yada, but like, you know, he's putting in that time elsewhere where the team doesn't see it. Mm-hmm. Ginny sees it because she also has to do the same thing. So that kind of like levels their playing field, and I think respect. And even when he sits down to talk with her over like that breakfast before Jimmy Kimmel, like it felt a lot less tense than their other interactions, and I feel like he was less pressured to put on a front with her, especially after that workout. But that ice bath scene, you know, yeah, it revealed that, you know, he's not in the best shape, but also the other pressures that are on him, in terms of not even just physical pressures, but, you know, Al comes over and like rambles off a list of things that are wrong, and then says, all right, I can take care of the psoriasis on my elbows, but you got to handle everything else. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not just his knees that are giving out. It's, you know, the team is falling apart, and it's kind of on him to, you know, rally them together before Al has to step in. Because as we see, Al's not doing much of anything in terms of that. In terms of motivational locker room speeches, let's just say he's doing a lot, but not being the face of being the problem solver.
I think one of the things that I am more attuned to on this watch, that I enjoyed on the previous one, but that strikes me more, is the relationship between Ginny and Mike Lawson. Like, I very much enjoy the sort of mentorship that is going on there that kind of goes both ways. I mean, there are obvious scenes of Mike helping Ginny, but I really liked the scene where they were working out before the game, how she took him by surprise and he was trying to keep up with her, because it didn't feel like how in a lot of movies or shows like this where you have a sort of like antagonist or someone who's jealous trying to keep up with the other person, and they're kind of pushing each other in a weird way. This didn't feel like that. It felt much more personal, and I really enjoyed their relationship kind of throughout this episode. Ariana, did you get, has this been a sort of like mentorship or relationship that you've really enjoyed from the beginning or even your previous watch? Is there anything new here for you?
I mean, I adore Mike Lawson with all my heart, and I'm just, I am glad that this episode, because I remember so little about this show. Mm-hmm. So I was really worried he was going to be more problematic than I had remembered, but I'm glad in this episode, like, I forgot about his wife, and I forgot, he's just so great in this episode. He's so lovely. So yeah, I'm glad that he's nice. And like I said, the first time around, I really shipped them hard because that's what I do. But this time around, yes. I'm just really enjoying, like, I don't know if I ship them. I don't know how I feel about that, but I'm really enjoying like this mentorship relationship they have. Like, I just think it's so cute. He's like this old gruff man. And she's so like young and sprightly, and like, I love when he's like showing her the tape and he's like, you gotta trust me. So yeah, I love their mentorship, and I love that, like you said, that scene where they're working out, like he's like trying to keep up with her, and like when they're done, he's like, oh yeah, good workout, and you see like he's like exhausted.
Mm-hmm. Or like he thinks that they're done midway through.
Yeah. But I think it's funny. I don't think that he's trying to do it like, so I'm like better than the girl, but just to be like, to try and keep up with the rookie. That's how I felt.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's always the idea hanging there that Ginny tried to tell him how much she idolized him. And she seems to have kind of not let that show through anymore, but she is definitely really open to anything he has to say to her. She'll have a sassy comeback for it, sure, but she knows and respects like how he plays the game and where he's coming from.
I am very much rooting for him and his ex-wife to get back together still.
Are you?
I am.
Okay.
Aren't you mad at her for cheating on him? Really, the only reason I like her is because he loves her. And so then I'm like, okay, there must be something like redeemable about this woman. But I'm so mad at her for cheating on him. He's so nice.
I feel like the way he brought, like, I am very sensitive to cheating storylines. Usually, like, the second someone cheats on someone, I'm over them. But the way that he presented it, like, I was kind of okay with it. Like, he presented it as if, like, he was a terrible partner and that like she felt neglected and that he got it. So I kind of got on board with that too, I guess. So I'm okay with it. I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah. And especially when he was like sitting there going through this stuff before, you know, she sold it and he was like, he couldn't remember their wedding song. Like I thought that that was very telling of like, you know, just how distant they were with one another.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout their even the early stages of their relationship, like, you know, he just couldn't remember.
And even the way that he came back to her where he was like, you were always mad that I put baseball first, but like now maybe I'll quit and we can be together. Well, you still put baseball first, like you still served your whole career, and now that it's over you're like kind of crawling back. So I'm a little bit on her side, but also kind of want her to take it back.
That's so interesting. I don't think I feel one way or another about her, but I do think that that line you pointed out, Kendra, about like how baseball is ending and so now he's good. I think that very much sticks out with how he kind of viewed or how he still views baseball. Like it is very important to him. Otherwise he wouldn't be almost completely killing himself every day with the workouts and the training and then the ice baths and dealing with 22-year-olds or in some cases like 18, 19-year-olds. And so I think that's interesting. And just the line about how he just wants someone to come home to at the end of the day and just like talk to, that line kills me. And I remember that more. I didn't remember that from the first time around, but that one also insinuates like, he's coming home and he wants someone home to be able to talk to. Like he doesn't want someone to share his life with. He wants someone after the thing that he loves doing is done for the day. And that makes me make him sound more selfish than I think he is. But I do think that the way in which he said it is telling.
And we also like, I mean, I don't want us to get off this topic, but we see, yeah, what that's like in real life for another player. Like we see Blip being able to, like, even though they lost and had a horrible game, go upstairs and have someone there who is there to talk to him about it. You know, it wasn't great and he's able to vent and, you know, his wife is a saint. So, you know, we get to like, you know, see what that life is like without it being like, without Lawson and Blip being together and him being like, well, you don't know, you get to go home. Like to someone, like, you know, that's not the conversation that we have, but we get to just kind of piece together, you know, what he's missing out on by looking at that.
Yeah. And I definitely do want to talk about them because I love them more this go around than I remember loving them in the first time I watched Pitch. But yeah, I think he is very much seeing the things that he's missing out on. And I think, I don't know. I kind of wanted to gauge your guys' thoughts on the closing scene of the episode where you have Amelia after the events of the day. She's sitting at the bar alone working with a glass of wine. Mike just comes up and sits next to her. And I think to me, it's really interesting because he's kind of, I have the context of like, he just wants to not be alone at the end of the day. And that could mean just literally sitting next to someone. It doesn't have to mean anything else. But I think their pairing in this way at the end of the episode makes for a really interesting potential pairing moving forward with just the two characters being together. Is that something that was intriguing to any of the newbies here, or even Aliana here? Thoughts on them kind of being, I think, the last shot of the episode, actually, weren't they?
Yeah, they were.
I feel comfortable speculating on this because I truly don't remember.
Okay.
But I mean, I definitely got the vibe that this was like, oh, they're gonna.
Like a hookup.
Like hookup.
Okay.
But possibly even like they're both sad and we'll start like a relationship. Like a relationship, I think, would be more drama in terms, at least for Ginny, our main character. If they were in a relationship, that would cause more drama.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're kind of the two most important people in her job. And they're probably going home and then talking about her. So I like them both individually. I do not like the idea of them in a relationship. I also don't feel like they're compatible for what they each need. I think they both need someone like softer.
Interesting. Okay. Kendra?
I could get behind it, I think. I think Ariana's probably right that it would not work out, but I would be interested in seeing it. I don't necessarily see Mike as not being soft yet, but I don't know him as well as you guys do. But I feel like in his marriage, if they had, like, in the times when they did have, like, a good partnership, he was probably the softer of the two. Like, his ex-wife seems like a go-getter in the mm-hmm. same way that Amelia is. So they could possibly complement each other in the same way as he and his ex-wife, although that didn't work out. But he's obviously in a different place now than he was when he was married. So I would be interested in seeing it.
That's a really good point. She does seem very similar to his ex-wife in terms of her personality.
For sure. Then before we wrap up, I do want to talk about Blip and Evelyn because I love them so much. And we get a couple of scenes with them. And she, while she is very much like a baseball wife, she is not what I would have imagined for someone who is a baseball wife. Like her life doesn't completely revolve around what Blip does, but she's very much a supportive partner. I think, Brittany, you were the one who was talking about the scene in the hotel room.
Yeah, I like that you brought up that she's not like portrayed as like the baseball wife, like whatever that connotation sort of brings to mind. You know, there's if you turn on Bravo, I'm sure there's a show about football wives. I think there is somewhere, or E, like there's always some sort of show where like I'm married to a football player and like
oh, for my sure. life
is I don't go to the games. So but I like that, you know, right now we've been mostly focused on the West Coast. They've had a series of games that are, you know, in San Diego and then in LA. So the fact that she drives up for like the local games is really nice. Like, I mean, I'm sure if they're like in Colorado for a 3-day game, like she's probably not flying out there. But you know, she does what she can with what she has. You know, she drives up, she sees the game, she takes care of his like superstitions, but also tries to like talk him off a ledge when, you know, things might not work out. But she puts in that little, like, you know, she understands what's important to him, but also at the same time realizes that it's not everything and tries to remind him of that, you know, that she's there at the end of the day, that, you know, his team is still there, whether or not he has his Grandmaster Flash shirt on. It's still the same group of people. It's, you know, there's more than baseball. You come home at the end of the day, you have someone to talk to, you wake up in the morning, you have breakfast with this other group of people who are going through the same thing. So it's not just him versus the game. His, you know, he has his kids. She says, you know, she reminds him, like, you know, what do you tell the boys before they go out? So yeah, she's so great. I love her. I want her and Vinny to hang out more.
Yeah. I love them too. Something that I really thought was interesting about her watching it this time around is how I feel like she's such a traditional, like she's such a traditional, I mean, I don't want to say like housewife because that has like bad connotations, but like a traditional stay at home wife in the way that like my grandma was, in that Blip is obviously, he's making a ton of money. So she doesn't need to work outside the home, but mm-hmm. like, because he is providing the financial stuff for their family, it's her job to make sure that he is able to do his job to get the money. So like she, you know, she, I mean, I don't want this to sound like condescending, but like she does like take care of him and support him because he is supporting them. So I like that it's how it's portrayed like in a positive way. Like she's an actual contributor and important part of this family for the role that she's doing.
And she's incredibly intelligent. She is a problem solver and she's able to kind of read the room and make things better, not only for like her husband, but for herself. She doesn't sacrifice herself or her like standard of living or her life for her husband. And they seem very much equal in this, which I think.
Yes. I think it's made very obvious that he could not do what yes. he does without her. Like his whole entire mental health depends on her.
Mm-hmm. I really enjoy.
As we see, like he's like a happy, stable person. And as we see, so many other ones are not.
Mm-hmm. Like Mike Lawson. I mean, he's, again, good person, but not as happy or not as stable as Blip is.
Right. And we see, like, you know, for Blip, like, I don't think the game and his career ending is, like, the be-all, end-all of him. Like, you know, you can see that he has other stuff going on that when it does eventually end, you know, he has his sons, he has his home, he has his in-laws' pot roast, which I can't determine whether or not it smells good or bad. So, you know, there's just, like, all this other stuff waiting for him should his career end any day.
All right. Well, I would like to end this episode on that positive note on the two of them. Unless anyone else has any other thoughts about this episode of Pitch in general or something that we missed.
Is anyone's favorite line or scene the mic
speech?
Yeah.
No. And actually, no, it's not.
Because I want to talk about that.
Yeah, no, let's talk about that. I want to talk about that too.
Okay, cool.
Please, would you like to lead off? Tell me your thoughts.
Oh, yeah, sure. So I just really liked how, you know, Mike's not standing up on a chair giving like a Coach Taylor Friday Night Lights type of speech. You know, he's showing the team how vulnerable he is. Like, he doesn't even stand up at all. He sits there and he's like, just, you know, he's in the corner. He's not in the center of the room. He's, you know, telling them what's at stake for him. Yes, it's very personal, but also like, what are they doing? Like, do they want to sulk and lose? And, you know, yeah, sure, you can blame Ginny as the distraction, but you're out there missing balls in the outfield and overthrowing the play to home. And all she's doing is sitting on the bench. She's not even starting those games.
Yeah. So, yeah.
You know, get out of your own heads and just play. And, you know, he has a lot at stake for this, you know, this could be his last season. Next season could be his last season. He's got bad knees. He's old and he doesn't have time to worry about, you know, his team fighting each other after every game over nothing. So I just really liked how he was able to just lay it all out for them. And they did listen, you know, like it's not just about them. It's about him and it's about Al, because Al's going to get fired and, you know, they're not doing it for themselves. So why can't they just do it for each other? Because they clearly don't care. And I think that it was just a really good speech. And I like the way it cut to Ginny's speech. You know, they're both very isolated in that moment. Like no one's, because Kimmel and those late night shows are like pre-taped at like 3:00. No one's seeing what she's saying.
Mm-hmm. They're going to see it after the game.
Exactly. So like they don't know what she's saying and, you know, they're all just sticking up for each other in other ways. And I just liked the way it was cut together. And it was very two isolated moments that felt very like married to each other.
Yeah, I really like that speech for the reasons you gave, because he's doing it from the chair, because he is not standing and trying to give a rousing speech. And it seems like it's out of frustration, but it also seems very carefully, again, calculated is probably the wrong word, but it's not like that he's doing this completely because in that moment he feels like he needs to. Like, yes, he does very much in that moment feel like he needs to, but he's had all of these thoughts already kind of well articulated in his head.
Yeah. And it was like a breaking point. Yeah. Cause Al talked to him already and was like, you got to get them together. Like, this is ridiculous. And then just having everything else pile on top of that, this was a breaking point.
For sure.
I also love that he like flat out tells them, like, she cares more than you do. And like, I've seen her. She works harder than you. She puts up with everything you're doing to her. You're just mad because now you're losing to sold out crowds when before you were losing to not sold out crowds.
I will say, for as much as I enjoyed it this time around, I did not remember this speech at all. I'm disappointed in myself because, yeah, I think this will be probably one of the things that I remember most about the show after this rewatch. All right. Any other last thoughts?
I was just surprised how much beer everyone drank for professional athletes. That was all.
Fair point. I mean, we have seen that a lot of them don't go to the gym.
Yeah. And I guess you, in a baseball game, you probably only have to run like a few meters.
Still. Yeah. I mean, speaking of fitness trackers, to take us all the way back, I play softball for my work team, obviously not this year, but I would like be like, yes, I have softball today. I'll get steps in. And I played the outfield and was running all the time. And then I would get off of the field and I'm like, wow, I took 1200 steps. The most steps I took was like running from right field to the dugout. Like, that was it. I was like, this is not a very like high intensity workout.
It is not. It is no soccer or basketball, right, for sure. Thank you for bringing it all the way back to the beginning, Brittany. All right. Well, let's move into our favorite scenes and favorite lines. My favorite scene, as I mentioned previously, was Mike inviting Ginny to sit next to him on the bus. I really liked the little, like, pointing down at the seat next to him when she turned around.
It's so cute.
It was so cute. It made me very happy. Kendra, what was your favorite scene?
I liked when Al apologized to Ginny in the locker room and he wouldn't even look at her, even though she said like 15 times that she was dressed. He was just feeling so awkward that he just could not take that information in.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
It was very sweet. Did a lot for his
character. I forgot about that. Yeah. That's a great one. Ariana, what's your favorite scene?
I think my favorite scene might be when Mike goes to go see his ex-wife, because I totally did not remember it at all. And I was just so moved and so sad for him. So yeah, I think it might've been that one.
Good choice. And Brittany, your favorite scene that you've alluded to multiple times, but please tell us again.
I love a good, like, I have a lucky, like, sock or something storyline. So when Evelyn had to tell Blip the news that the shirt was disintegrated in the wash, and just his like reaction of like sinking back into the chair, like all forlorn and just like being a mess. I loved it so much. So his reaction to that whole thing was so great.
It was perfect. Loved it. All right. And then in terms of favorite lines, mine was at the very top of the episode where they're going through a bunch of like news segments and TV programs. And there's a TV news anchor that says, "Come on, men, haven't you seen the movie? There's no crying in baseball." And I really enjoy A League of Their Own. So I really liked that line.
Kendra, she's a real like sports person, right? I don't watch the sports, but I'm pretty sure she's real.
I wouldn't be surprised, because I feel like most of the people that they do have on here is real, which is really impressive, but I do not know for sure.
Yeah. I don't recognize her or the other like blonde guy that they keep showing, but they might just be baseball commentary people. So I wouldn't actually know who they are. Like, they could be on like, they keep showing like Fox Sports, so I don't actually watch that, so I don't recognize them, but I would assume that they would keep people like that on.
Yeah, I mean, with having sportscasters on in the first episode, with having Jimmy Kimmel, I wouldn't be surprised if they're trying to keep it as grounded as possible.
Yeah, I was shocked with Jimmy Kimmel, but then I remembered that Fox doesn't have like late night, so I was like, oh, hey, they had to go to another network.
Oh, yeah, that's a great point. I didn't think about that. Kendra, your favorite line, please.
I liked when she was on Jimmy Kimmel and Jenny said, it seems like I'm making a statement just by existing lately, so why not make a few more, right before she kind of made her statement, which I don't think we really talked about, but I liked how she made a statement in support of her team, but also against the issue as a whole.
Yeah, I thought it was really well articulated.
Kendra, you're right. We didn't talk about that at all. And it was like the climax of the episode.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I am not doing well today with that. Do we want to quickly talk about it?
I mean, even I was like, oh, let's talk about Lost in Speech. Yeah, Jenny was saying some stuff on Jimmy Kimmel at the same time, but let's focus on him banging the locker room. Like,
oh, goodness. Well, I will say, in terms of that, I think that her speech was really well articulated, probably better than or as good as anything that Amelia could have written for her. I thought it towed the line between what Jenny wanted to say and also the acknowledgement of what people are putting on her without inviting people, I guess, to put more things on her. I don't know. I was really impressed, especially since Jenny is supposed to be like, what, 22, 23? I can't even speak eloquently on here a lot of times. So very impressed.
I also want to briefly point out that I feel like this is the first time we've seen her like dressed up, isn't it?
I think so. Yeah. It's either been like uniform or like sports bra and sweatpants.
Yeah. And she looks great. Like she does actually look like a model. Like she really fabulous. Does.
Definitely.
And I also would like to point out, just because it's my favorite color, that I love that she's wearing a pink dress. I feel like that was probably an Amelia move to be like, for your first appearance, we'll remind everyone that you're a girl.
Just in case they forgot.
Girl power.
Girl power. Yeah, she looked fantastic. And I mean, with that workout regimen that she has, I would expect nothing less, because I would not be able to survive that. All right. Ariana, would you like to give us your favorite line?
I feel really bad that this is my favorite line, but I do really I really loved Al's speech, at least the end of it. Like when I hate it when men invoke their daughters to like,
yeah,
be like, well, I couldn't have been sexist because I have daughters. But yeah. I do love the way that he brought his daughter up, like in a way to compare. Like it made me feel like he sees Jenny in the same way he sees his daughter, which I do think is true because she's so like young. And that when he talks about like, my daughter's a doctor and she's the smartest person I know, and I do also happen to think that she's beautiful. It's not the most interesting thing about her, but it like she is. Just the way he talked about his daughter was so lovely, and I hate that it had to be like in this like apologizing for his sexist comments way, but I was like, oh, that's so sweet how he talks about his daughter.
Yeah, I think that's the closest to him actually understanding kind of beyond his age group, like what the issue is. And like you said, it's very different from the, well, I have a daughter, so like I can't be this. It kind of bridged the gap between perhaps how we're all expecting people to treat and talk about each other, and how on the other end, like people of older generations are very much set in their ways and not thinking about that. It kind of puts him a little bit in the middle of that, if that makes sense. So I like that part too, Ariana. I'm with you. And Brittany, please give us your favorite line.
My favorite line is, so it comes from Jenny when she's cornered in the hallway by Mike's ex-wife, and you know she's being told like, you have to say something because you're in like the exact same place as this girl, and with the locker room, the track and field situation that's happening in Florida. And she says, no one is in my exact shoes, and woman to woman, screw you for putting that on me. And I think that just really echoes a lot of you know, a lot of the stuff we talked about mostly in episode one, where Ginny finds herself in this place and she has to take on a lot of stuff that comes with it, even if she really just wants it to boil down to the fact that she's there to be a baseball player. But she is in a spot where she can't avoid all the baggage that comes with it, being like the only woman in the major leagues and having to deal with, you know, being the only woman in a locker room and having people say stuff about her and the way she looks. So I just really liked that line.
Yeah, that's a powerful one. That's a great one. Good choice. All right. Well, those were our favorite scenes, our favorite lines, and our many thoughts about episode two, The Interim. But as you noticed, we may have missed a few things as we were going along. So we want to hear what you have to say about what we talked about or perhaps what we didn't talk about. So if you have thoughts, please contact us. You can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at re_watchable. And you can come find us on Facebook. Our Facebook group is called Rewatchables Rewinders. You'll know you're in the right place when you see a photo of Ginny as the cover photo. And as always, we would like to ask that if you have a spare like 30 seconds that you give us a review on iTunes. It can literally be done with just a few taps of your finger on your phone. But 5 stars will help other people find us and it will help grow our Rewatchable family, which will be a good thing for everyone. And as always, we do have an incentive for you. So this week, if you rate us 5 stars on iTunes, then Karen will give you some clubhouse decorating tips. And Karen is a relatively good decorator, so you might want those. So go and rate us 5 stars, and we'll see what she comes up with for you. And we do have some people who did give us feedback this week, which is so wonderful to have again after however many months we've been without it. So let me see. Kendra, would you like to take this tweet, please?
Sure. So this comes from Katie Kawa at Nerdy Girl Notes on Twitter. She says, I would like to thank the Rewatchable Pitch podcast for keeping me company on my walks after work. I cannot wait until they really start diving into Mike as a character. Check. This is going to be fun.
Yep. And we've only just begun, but I'm glad that we could accompany you, Katie. That's great. I want to take this first one from Facebook. I answered it on Facebook, but I'd like to answer it here. This comment comes from Laura Trippy Morrow, and she says, I have a silly question that I wonder if anyone noticed. Why is Ginny living above the ball field? Is that a common thing that occurs, or is that special for the show? And essentially, so she's actually living, I believe, in a hotel that's super close to the ballpark, to where she can get there pretty quickly. But it is pretty common for players that are called up from the minors to just kind of live in hotels like this and live close to the ball field, because she very much still is a minor player. She hasn't added to the official roster for the Padres. And as Ariana pointed out earlier, it's only been maybe 48 to 72 hours since that first game. So she is going to be living in a hotel, and most likely she's super, super close to the field because of how important of a figure she is. So hope that makes sense. All right. And then our second comment from Facebook for today comes from Sandy Gray. Let's see, Ariana, would you like to take this one?
Sure. Sandy said, although I liked the pilot episode of Pitch, I did not like the pandering to the male gaze that showed her getting out of bed, shaking her hair, the camera focused on her body, not showing her face, because women's faces are unimportant, as well as her agent in the skimpy top stretching her arms up as she fixed her hair while the guy stared at her bosom. Hopefully future episodes will move beyond such tricks to keep male viewers. I'm glad you guys are back. I respectfully disagree with Sandy's point of view. I don't feel like the pilot was in the male gaze at all. Like, I think that the opening scene was actually like a pretty standard opening scene of like, even like sometimes now you hear people being like, oh, I hate it when pilots start with somebody getting out of bed because it's like so common. But I feel like they wanted to show how her day was. I think it was all for like artistic reasons, if that makes sense. Like, I don't, like for me, I didn't feel like it was in the male gaze at all. And yeah. And I feel like her agent, like, as we've talked about Amelia a lot in this episode, I feel like she dresses the way she does because it makes her feel powerful, as she is very much a person in control of her own agency, I feel.
Do you think that they filmed Ginny's first moments in the way that they did? Both, like, I've seen a lot of pilots try not to show the face of the main character for, like, the first few minutes. I think that's pretty common. But also, with the episode we just covered as context, do you think they showed it as both the normal routine of just, like, any woman getting ready for the day, and also the normal routine of a baseball player getting ready for the day, and kind of conflating the two without giving a specific person or personality to hook it to?
The way I thought it was meant to be done was, like, a baseball player is getting ready for their day, and then, like, you slowly reveal the baseball player is a woman, and now you see, like, oh, she's the first woman. She has, like, peaches from Hillary Clinton filling up her hotel room. Oh, wait, now she has, like, hundreds of fans waiting for her outside. Oh, she's a huge deal. So I feel like that was what the reveal was. Like, slowly, like, oh, she's a normal person. Just kidding. No, she's not at all.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think I'm more in line with you because I didn't see it as the male, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it might not have been. I didn't look to see who worked on that specific episode and if it was a woman behind the camera or in the editing room. But I definitely appreciate you leaving us that comment, Sandy. And that's definitely something to keep in mind moving forward. Let us know if you see anything else like that or how your opinions may or may not change as we move forward. And speaking of moving forward, before we end for today, it is now that time where we get predictions for season one, episode 3 of Pitch. The episode is called Beanball, and it's now time for Brittany's brainstorms and Kendra's creeping suspicions. What do you got for us this week, guys?
Do you know what a beanball is, Kendra?
I don't. The only thing I can... Do you?
Yes, so I will let you go first. Oh. That was the only reason.
My only thought for Bean was that they're going to go to Chicago.
Oh, that's
hey.
But that's all as far as the title. I feel like there's probably going to be some follow-up from the managerial change, and Ginny's probably going to be playing baseball again.
So my prediction is based off of the fact that I do know what a beanball is. And we haven't seen, I know we talked about it a bit in our first episode, but we haven't seen Ginny bat yet. And so I'm interested to see, you know, her come back into the game, because she'll probably have, I think, at this point, if they finish the series in Los Angeles, they will probably be on a new team when we return to them, with her pitching, because I think she's like, she would have a couple of games. She would either pitch the last game against the Dodgers, or she'd pitch the first game against a new team. So a beanball is when they throw the ball and it hits the batter with the intent to cause harm. So I have a feeling that she's going to get hit with a ball that's meant to hurt her, and or she's going to accidentally hit someone with a ball. My feelings are focusing more on, like, the latter being the first thing, and whether or not she chooses to retaliate because, you know, pitchers have control of the ball. Mm-hmm. So I guess watching to see what happens there. I know we'll definitely probably return to a game situation, and I think a lot of Mike's trust is going to come into this, you know, focusing on the calls, because that was a big thing that they kind of brought up this episode, was you have to trust me, you have to listen to me, you can't wave me off all the time. So
I have a question about that, Brittany. Mm-hmm. Why would they, like, wouldn't they get in trouble for doing that?
Yes, they would. I think it's more of a retaliation thing, sort of like, you're not supposed to do it. You're supposed to make it not look like you're intentionally throwing a ball at someone's head or leg or elbow or something. But normally what happens is if a pitcher throws a ball and it hits someone, it's sort of like that other pitcher is able to retaliate. It's an unspoken thing that happens that's not above board in any type of way. But it is something that I think you look for, or at least, like, you know, fans look for. Like if someone throws a pitch and it hits the guy in an elbow, and then, you know, well, when that pitcher's up at bat, you're paying a little bit more close attention to what's going to happen.
So. Yep. It's,
I don't even know why I know that term.
Now, I'm very excited now for the next episode, which I remember nothing about it.
But I was looking at it and I was like, beanball, why? I'm like, that's a thing. Like, that's a, like, I was thinking first of like the nectarines. I'm like, is that like a practice ball? And then I'm like, no, I know exactly what a beanball is.
You remembered what that meant before I did. So that is impressive. Not that I know a ton about baseball, but that I know that you're like a big football person.
Yeah. I don't know why I knew that. Like, it must've been like something my dad told me once, just coming out of nowhere unexpectedly,
like a beanball.
Yeah. Like a beanball. Just like, whoa, I know what that is.
All right. Well, we are going to leave it there for today. But please join us here next time when we discuss season 1, episode 3, Beanball. But that's it for today. I'm Danielle.
I'm Kendra.
I'm Mariana. And I'm Brittany.
And Brittany, he's here somewhere.
No, I am here. Can you not hear me?
We didn't hear you say, and I'm Brittany.
Oh, I like made sure I wasn't on mute and everything. I'm Brittany. I think I'll just leave Adiana's in there, though, because I like it.
Okay. We'll talk to you later, guys. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Yeah.
Gosh, I made sure I was unmuted and everything. Ugh.